temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer? A beach bum summer? Or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
All right, and we're back here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. All right, we're going to do some science here. Buckle up. Toxic PFAS forever chemicals, reading now from TheGuardian.com. These chemicals are ubiquitous in the Great Lakes basin's air, rain, atmosphere, and water, new peer-reviewed research shows. The first of its kind comprehensive picture of PFAS levels for the basin, which holds nearly 95% of the nation's fresh water, also reveals that precipitation is probably a major contributor to the lake's contamination. We didn't think the air and rain were significant sources of PFAS in the Great Lakes environment, but it's not something that's been studied that much, said Marta Vigneur, a co-author with Indiana University. PFAS are a class of 15,000 chemicals used across dozens of industries to make products resistant to water, stains, and heat. The chemicals are linked to cancer, kidney disease, birth defects, decreased immunity, liver problems, and a range of other serious diseases. Joining us right now to talk about this is Dr. Ali Ling, an assistant professor in civil engineering at the University of St. Thomas. Dr. Ling, thanks for making the time.
Hi, Ian. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm good.
I'm so pleased to hear it. Okay, first I want to make sure I'm kind of using the right nomenclature here. And when I was reading about this, I kept saying PFAs to myself, like it's a plural of a PFA, but that's not correct. What's the right shorthand to use for this?
Yeah, so the acronym is PFAS, and it's usually pronounced either PFAS or PFAS, kind of depending on what part of the country you're from.
Okay, now I'm going to take a stab at this, probably going to embarrass myself. Perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances. How'd I do?
That's good, yeah. And the kind of the breakdown of what that means, it means that there's a lot of different ones of them. It's anything that has kind of this carbon fluorine backbone in it. But there actually are tens of thousands of different kinds of these chemicals being used today.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm glad I got the pronunciation right. I was a drama major, so we're all here to do what we're all here to do. Listen, so these chemicals were kind of first invented in the 1930s, and they've been used in a huge variety of consumer products. Can you just give us a brief overview of how these chemicals were discovered and some of the different ways that we use them?
Yeah, they were discovered kind of midway through the 20th century, and they are super useful chemicals. Part of the way that we develop chemicals to use in our society and economy is we look for products that have really useful properties. And so PFAS are very durable. They last a really long time. They also have things like nonstick properties. So you might have heard that they are part of like Teflon pans and other types of nonstick things. They're also very... they're very good at resisting water and grease. So they're used in rain jackets and other waterproof types of applications. Scotchgard, if you remember Scotchgard. So they're very useful. They've been used a lot And at this point, they're pretty ubiquitous in most of our supply chain. They're in a lot of the products that we use on a day-to-day basis. And they got there just because they're so useful, and we were focused more on that than we were on potential environmental and health impacts.
I'm looking around at my space here now, and I'm imagining I've got a thermos here that probably has these in there. There's a protector over the microphone that's probably full of this stuff. The clothes I'm wearing, the surface that my computer and everything is sitting on, it's got to be in all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's in a lot of things. So some of the main things where people might interact with them, a lot of clothing and textiles do, though there's bans on having those starting in some states. Paper products, a lot of paper manufacturing uses it, as well as like recycled paper has it. It's used in manufacturing semiconductors. So a lot of your electronics have it. A lot of wires have it. For sure, any sorts of furniture, flooring, carpets, building materials, a lot of those often have those for the durability and the water repellent properties.
And what is it about these chemicals, doctor, that make them so harmful to human health?
You know, they are harmful to human health. They're not like so harmful to human health,
okay, that's
but
good.
They're one of many environmental risks that we face on a day-to-day basis. So I think it's something that we need to be aware of, but I wouldn't say that like for most communities in the U.S., I don't think the health risk posed by PFAS is greater than the health risk posed by like a whole bunch of other environmental things we face.
Sure.
The thing about PFAS that's really concerning is the same reason that it's been called forever chemicals. They basically do not degrade in the environment. So let's say you throw a banana peel out your window, like you're probably a bad person for doing that, but it's going to go away in, you know, a couple of weeks. You put PFAS out there, it's going to take tens of thousands of years or even longer. We have no evidence that it degrades completely in the environment using any known scientific mechanism.
So that would explain in part then how it ends up in our water supply, right? Because it can't be broken down anywhere. So whether it's, you know, rain runoff or sewer runoff or whatever it is, these chemicals, you know, they're sort of, you know, cousins and neighbors chemicals would break down, but these don't. And so they end up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The United States Geological Survey has found that half of all tap water in the U.S. is estimated to be contaminated with PFAS. Is there anything I'm not understanding about how these chemicals became so widespread in our water?
No, it's true. So the two main issues with it is they're somewhat toxic, as you mentioned, the persistence that I mentioned where they don't break down. And then the third thing is that they're really mobile in the environment. Mm. So they move around really well in the air, and they also really stay in the water. So a lot of organic contaminants that we've dealt with over the last decades, if they're in the ground or in lakes, they stick more to the soils or to the sediment. And so when you, let's say they're in the ground and you're pumping water out of the ground through a well, a lot of organic contaminants will kind of stick to the soils down there rather than staying in the water. But PFAS are very soluble. They're very mobile in the environment. So once they get out there, if they're in the atmosphere, they come down as rain, as you mentioned, or if they're in the ground, they really stay with the water. And so when you're pumping up water for your drinking water, you see them in the water more than you might see of other contaminants that we've seen in the past.
Okay, tell me about this new set of limits that the Environmental Protection Agency has rolled out. How are these supposed to work?
Yeah, are you talking about the drinking water limit?
Yes.
Yeah. So these have been under discussion for some time. The drinking water is one of the most measured and tracked substances in the United States for good reason, because we ingest it. So overall, the drinking water in the United States is very safe because it's very regulated. It's very tracked in terms of what's in it. And the EPA sets limits on what is supposed to be in there. So as a result, we know about PFAS in our drinking water a lot more than we might know about PFAS in other things that we're exposed to. So the new limits are for every public water system in the United States is meant to meet limits of, it's either 4 or 10, and it's parts per trillion.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of a hard number to get your head around. So parts per trillion means like, it's basically like a fraction of one on the top and then a trillionth on the bottom. And what that means is that for every trillion pounds of water, you have 1 pound of PFAS.
Whoa. That seems quite strict.
Yeah, well, and part of the issue is that there's potential health benefits at that level. So this is one of the things that makes understanding and tracking where PFAS is difficult because we have to measure it at such low concentrations. And there's a couple of metaphors that people use for parts per trillion. Some people say it's like one drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Wow.
The one that I like to use most recently is if you take every living human being in the earth and you manage to fit everybody on a scale, one part per trillion would be like the weight of one person's hand in relation to the weight of the entire mass of humanity that's alive right now.
Whoa. Wow. Okay, so now it's starting to kind of come into clearer focus for me why this is such a big deal, like why this is such this is a pretty heavy lift for the EPA and the people they're regulating. I was just, how are these regulations going to be enforced? Who's going to pay for this?
That's a good question that I don't have an answer to. There's some speculation that some of it will be paid for by some of the companies that either make PFAS or the companies that make things that make PFAS in it. There are some public water systems in the United States where the drinking water treatment has already been paid for or partially paid for by some of those companies. But these new rules apply to all the systems in the United States. And the data are a little bit mixed on this, but it's probably somewhere between 10% and 30% of drinking water systems would need new treatment in order to meet these limits. And there's not going to be enough money from the manufacturers to cover the cost of all of those systems.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, so scientists are working on technologies to remove PFAS from drinking water. How effective are those?
You know, there are very well demonstrated technologies that have been put into place. There are drinking water treatment systems actively in place right now that are very effective at removing PFAS from water. The main issue and the reason why we don't just treat all of the water everywhere to a very high standard is that it costs more. Mm-hmm. And often those costs get passed on to whoever's paying the water bills for that utility.
Okay, and then once you pull the PFAS out of the water, you still have to figure out what to do with it, right? So how do you safely dispose of this once it's filtered out? And what does it come out looking like? You know, kind of paint the picture for us. Is it like a powder or a sludge or what? And then what do you do with that? Is that toxic waste?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I mentioned that the PFAS in the drinking water is at around parts per trillion. So it's very, very dilute in the drinking water. Mm-hmm. With the drinking water treatment systems, the first step is to take that really dilute PFAS in the water that you're starting with and concentrate it down to a smaller volume. The way that's usually done in drinking water treatment is through, you have these huge tanks that are full of material that's kind of, it's kind of like the shape of sand, but it's similar to charcoal. So it's called granular activated carbon. And you fill these huge tanks with this material that's like black sand, but it's got a lot of surface area per volume. So if you have like a teaspoon of this stuff, there's like a whole football field full of surface area on it. There's all these little tiny little pores. And so what happens when you pump the water through that is that the PFAS sticks to all of those tiny little pores on that carbon material for a while until it doesn't, until there's so much on there that it can't fit anymore. Mm-hmm. And at that point, what you do is you change out that media. So you've got these tanks that are full of this black sand, and you basically take all the black sand out and put a whole bunch of new black sand in. So the stuff that's done, is the spent media. There are a couple different options right now. You can landfill it and just put it in a landfill, but then the PFAS kind of stays in the landfill and can kind of cycle around with the water that seeps out of the landfill. Other options, you can burn it. One of the main issues with destroying the PFAS, as I mentioned, it's persistent. It's hard to destroy. There's no natural mechanism to destroy it.
Yeah.
If you want to destroy it, you have to heat it up to about 1,000 degrees C, which is really hot. Like the clean cycle on your oven is like 450 degrees C. So it's like if you have to get it up to 1,000, which is way high up there.
Wow. Wow. Okay. If you're just tuning in, excuse me, I'm kind of flabbergasted at that. My guest is Dr. Ali Ling. Dr. Ling is an assistant professor in civil engineering at the University of St. Thomas. So How can people listening take care to filter PFAS out at home? I guess it's, I can't imagine that's very cost effective either. Like you said, the concentration of drinking water is really quite low. But if somebody did want to install a filter or something in their home, is that a thing we're doing?
Yeah, you can do that. And I just want to back up a little bit and give you kind of the broader context. Most people in the United States, PFAS in your drinking water is not a major health concern.
Yes, okay.
For most Americans get about 80% of their PFAS exposure through something that is not drinking water. Mm-hmm. So that could be things like the food that they're eating, if there's food packaging that has PFAS on it, or it comes from dust that you inhale in your house. So unless you're in a system that has a large amount of PFAS in your drinking water, you probably don't need to do this. But if you do have PFAS in your drinking water, you can use one of those like Brita filters with the GAC, yeah. Or you can install something under like your kitchen sink that has a reverse osmosis system or a granular activated carbon system to remove the PFAS. But if you use the carbon, you do have to change it out every now and then. They give you like little cartridges that you need to exchange so that you're taking it out of there once it gets out.
And what role does the EPA's Superfund program have to play here?
You know, I am not much of a regulatory specialist, so there have been some changes in that area recently, but I have not been tracking them very well, and I am not necessarily equipped to speak to them very well.
That's great. I love that kind of answer. I wish people would give me that answer more often, be like, I don't know. That's not my expertise. That's not what I'm here to do. Okay, great. So I did have one other thing I wanted to ask Dr. Lang, and I think you've kind of already answered this in part, but let's just hear you say it in your own words. I think there's a not insignificant amount of people listening to us right now that have private wells at home where mm-hmm. they pull water from, and testing for PFAS, you know, for the individual, I guess, can be expensive. What advice would you give them who, if they want to ensure their water from their well is safe to drink, do they just run it through a Brita, just like you said?
Yeah, again, like it only makes sense to treat it if you have high levels
if
of
you
PFAS
have a lot.
In your drinking
yeah.
water. So you should be able to contact a laboratory in your state. You could probably just search for PFAS testing and send them in. Those samples are not cheap. It typically costs like $500 mm-hmm. to test some water for PFAS.
I see. Okay, I have a couple texts that have just come in, and here's one that says, it sounds like forever chemicals are another asbestos, in quotes. This stuff is great. Let's use it everywhere. Hold up. It's okay. Just sue the companies that believed it was safe. How could they be so stupid? What's your reaction, doctor?
No, I've heard that metaphor a lot, and I think it's a good metaphor. The thing about PFAS that I think makes it extra challenging is they are so ubiquitous in the things that we use. So asbestos was used really heavily in building products and in some other sectors, but PFAS are in, you know, we all interact with PFAS in products that we use every day. You know, it's cosmetics, it's menstrual products, it's paper, it's clothing, it's shoes, it's there's so many things. And so I think it is similar in that they're both kind of like these miracle chemicals that are really useful in a lot of ways. But I do think that phasing out PFAS might be more challenging just because of the sheer volume of applications where they're used right now.
I think this was really interesting and very educational. And I want to thank you so much, doctor, for your time, your work, and your way. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Ian. Nice
All
to talk
right.
to you.
Dr. Ali Ling is an assistant professor in civil engineering at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. When we come back, I'm going to update you on what's happening on the stand in Donald Trump's porn star hush money cover-up trial. Michael Cohen is still testifying, but it looks like the prosecution has rested. So we'll talk a little bit about what happens next. If you want to react to anything you've heard so far today or get in here otherwise, the way to do it is the Okunart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give me a call. Shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. I'll be right back after this.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!